Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
All right, everybody, welcome back for another episode this week, and we're continuing our focus on women and females. I guess they would be one and the same, but I'm always a little worried about saying the correct political thing in dentistry. And this week we have with us a wonderful dentist from Austin, Texas, Dr. Cynthia Graves. And Cynthia, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Having a good Sunday.
I already told you, just so the listeners know, I really like your shirt. I keep looking at it.
Yeah, thanks.
I mean, I don't know about the earring and the necklace. I don't know if that's for me, but the shirt is definitely for me.
I think you could rock it, you know?
Yeah, and maybe the glasses even.
Maybe just one earring, you know? I don't know.
I don't know about the dangly thing. That doesn't bother you, having something dangle off like that?
Not when I'm not working. When I'm working, I don't dangle because, you know, everything gets caught in it, the loops and the mask and all, but... Yeah,
so you can't be trendy? You can't be like a you can't have all that stuff while you're working?
That must be so hard
as a female to not be able to wear the earrings you want to wear while working.
Yeah. I don't wear my ring either. I don't wear my ring to work at all.
I don't wear that when I go to the bars.
I'm going to tell your wife that.
Well, you know, the truth is I lost my wedding band probably within 1 year of getting married.
Oh.
And she has not replaced it. I took it as a sign of trouble the first year, but now 15 years later, it's not a big deal anymore.
She knew that it would just be like a repetitive cycle.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Unfortunately. So, let's get going. And because I've had a tendency to make these things long and I'm trying to get this down to about 40 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
I think the hour and 20-30 minute episode is a little too long, but you know, so Cynthia, tell our listeners a little bit about you, who you are, how you got where you're at, kind of your, you know, if you don't mind, whether you have kids, how old they are, things like that, where you're at in your career and those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, I'll be 55 this year. I graduated from dental school 30 years ago, went to Baylor in Dallas, which is now Texas A&M. And, I don't really care for that, but that's a whole nother story. I married the wrong guy and moved around the country. So I'm actually, at one time I was licensed in 4 states. I took the Texas board, which was a standalone. Then I took the Western Regional, practiced in Arizona for 5 years in a government clinic, which was very interesting. It was almost like a GPR. And then, got a residency over in Missouri. So I went to Missouri, practiced 2 years there.
So and then the wrong husband was a dentist as well?
No, he was just out of med school.
Medical
and so
doctor,
I followed him around.
The wrong kind of doctor, too.
Just the wrong guy. Yeah. He was doing a general surgery residency in Arizona and then in Tucson. And then in Missouri, he was doing thoracic surgery residency. Then he got his first job in West Virginia. So I got to take the NURB. 9 years out of dental school, it's a lot of fun to take another hands-on board. And then I practiced there kind of part-time-ish. That's when my kids are adopted from Russia. They're now 19 and 21. And moved back to Texas in 2001. And I went back to work in 2004. That's about the time we were getting divorced. I was an associate for a few years. And then my New Year's resolution in 2008 was to get a practice. So I purchased a practice. It's a nice practice. It's over in the community where I grew up. And the dentist stayed on for, he was supposed to stay on for 2 years. But unfortunately, my mother fell ill with a lung cancer. And so he was gracious enough. The former owner stayed on until 2011. So he stayed about 2.5 years, just short of 3 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was a nice transition. He was very supportive of me. His son, David Bolin, Ron Bolin is the dentist. David was the in-lab CEREC for Sirona for a long time. Okay. Anyways, so I've been an owner dentist since 2008, went into CEREC in 2012, added comb beam in 2014. So when I was 50 years old, I added CEREC. I had a comb beam in 14. I took your class in early 15.
Right.
And I did my first implants because I had confidence because you taught the class so well.
Don't lie to the listeners, okay?
That's a shameless suck up right there, right?
Please don't.
No, seriously. I mean, the way you said get with your specialist. I have a specialist that comes in. He's I could be his mother. He's in his early 30s. And he's kind of like my dorky little brother. I just adore him. He's wonderful. He's a periodontist, and his practice model is to go around to different offices. And he's been extremely supportive of my venture into implants. And he was absolutely correct, because as soon as I got into the comb beam and started doing implants, he's doing more lateral wall sinus lifts, the more advanced things that I really don't want to get into.
So this one of the side effects that you and he have both have seen is that by you doing some of the quote unquote simpler cases, you are now diagnosing more complex things.
Yeah.
So in other words, what was his business revenue wise from you was simple implants now have turned into quite frankly, probably technically better work for you, for him.
Yeah.
At least.
Right. I mean, he was excited. He said, "Hey, you know what this means? This means I get to do more fun cases in your practice."
Yeah.
And
so he comes to your office.
He comes to the office. We schedule him out once a month. He comes for about a 4-hour block of time.
Okay. And is that a revenue share?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So if you don't mind sharing, how does that work?
So 50-50? It's 50-50. And then I pay a rate on some of the consumables.
Okay. So like the bone and implants. Typically, right. A lot of people split that, or they do something along that lines.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm working towards that. I think that's one of the big things. Let's come back to that. I'm going to make a note to talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
About how I'm trying to do that as well. So I want to go back to something, if you don't mind. Of all the females I've interviewed, and even myself, I guess, being married to a physician, I guess I don't think this is a man thing. Maybe this is just a me thing, but I take for granted that depending on who you marry, how young you marry, and when you marry, you may have to move around. It may put your goals on hold for a period of time. And did you feel like that, you know, take away that, you know, retrospectively was the wrong person.
Because it wasn't
the wrong person at that point for you. Were you a little bit resentful of putting yourself on hold to a certain degree?
Well, I mean, when we started the marriage, the promise was that I would return to Dallas. I was in one year an associateship with a guy named John Finley, one of the nicest people you'd ever want to know. He's a huge mentor. I love him like a dad. And so the promise was we would return to Plano and I would rejoin that practice. And then I saw this is kind of the story. But anyway, we didn't do that. So, yeah, I had some regrets that I put my professional life on hold. But it allowed me the opportunity to be a stay-at-home mom. I actually did stay-at-home mom for like 3 years. My God, that's a hard job. You know,
so when you say stay-at-home mom, you mean full-time.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Cynthia, you seem like a pretty driven person.
Yeah, well, I am. But one of my kid's godfather said to me, he goes, "You know, I've had a lot of dentists in my life of only one mom." And I thought, you know, they're only little for a while. So I practiced when we adopted Grace in 1996. I was working one day a week in a office, and I was really at that point where
and where
I was
were you living to, then?
We were in Charleston, West Virginia at the time.
In coal country, okay.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Three sets of teeth. You get baby teeth, grown up teeth, and plastic teeth. Is kind of the mentality. I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but it was a difficult paradigm to overcome in that community. For a large majority of the people. So I decided, my then husband received an opportunity to go out to West Texas. We went to a small community, San Angelo, which is about 2.5 hours northwest of Austin. It's a nice community out there. And at the time, the kids were little and the community is small. I wanted to see if we were going to be there, if it was going to stick, if we were going to stay there. Which he turned out moving back to Austin within 2 years. So, again,
not getting too personal. Was your marriage healthy at this point?
No. As my lawyer put it, basically the marriage survived because he was doing a residency and we didn't see each other. He could be whoever I wanted him to be. He was Brad Pitt, man. And then he was gone for 24 hours at a time.
Okay.
So.
So I don't want to dive into all of that stuff too much.
But I've got a great guy now. George is fantastic. Oh yeah. Yeah. You've met George. He's a business broker and he's real smart, very supportive of me and the practice. So
now is Graves your original married name, your maiden name?
Yeah. Graves is my maiden name. When I came back to Central Texas, I went to high school here at Round Rock. And when I came back and enrolled the kids in school, this lady looked at me and she goes, "You're one of the Graves sisters." And I'm like, "I've got to go back to my maiden name because too many people knew me here."
Because you grew up in Austin?
I did. I went to high school and we moved here when I was an eighth grader. Okay. My dad was with IBM and I'm a native Texan. We were in North Texas. They closed the plant in Sherman where I was born and we moved down here. So it's home. I went to UT. I was in Longhorn Band.
Another shameless plug. So that's okay. Yeah. Let me ask you this. I took it. It was very difficult for me to have my wife Mona not take my name, my last name. When we got married, and certainly because we got married before she finished medical school. So it's not like, in my eyes, it's not like she had a practice built and all of that stuff. We moved here to North Carolina. So it wasn't like she was in South Florida where her name actually,
where everybody knew her.
Had some familiarity. And there's like 60 physicians in her family. But, I'm listening to you because this is the first time this has come up. And I did think about the fact that oftentimes we have to hop around. At the end of the day, if my wife took a residency, it's very interesting. And maybe this is me. Yeah. My wife took a residency based on where I was because I had already started my practice.
Yeah.
Although she asked me not to start my practice, but that's a different story because of where her residency may take her. And then there's the name issue as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That was the deal. I started dating my ex-husband when he was still in med school. I had already graduated. I graduated dental school. Yes. And I was in private practice already practicing as Graves. When I got married, I took his name and, moved around the country using his name. And then when I got divorced, I thought, I'm going to go back to my maiden name because,
never know.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. So talk to us about this, your practice that you have and, is it pretty much the same as when you bought it or is it changed a lot?
It's changed a lot. When I bought the practice, I pretty much inherited a good, healthy practice. He'd brought in Levin and Pinnacle before. It's a fee-for-service practice. We don't take any in-network patients. We file as out-of-network for folks. Good upper middle class, but we've got a variety of patients. But since I went digital, it's really transformed the practice.
So you're still out of network for every insurance?
Yes.
Do you guys accept assignment?
No.
And what I mean by that is your patients pay you the entire amount up front?
No. We try to do an estimate And then we balance bill with the understanding that it's due within 30 days or they have to have a financial arrangements. We use Care Credit and Wells Fargo financing.
And you haven't found that this stifles growth in any way?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
You know, yes and no. It seems like when the Obamacare came into effect, a lot of the employers went to, there's not as many in-network in Texas as you have over there on the East Coast. But when Obamacare came on, IBM and some of the other bigger employers went to in-network plans. And I do a thing I call bless and release. I bring the patients, you know, I either take them into the consult room if I have time, or I sit them up and I have a face-to-face conversation and I say, you know, I understand and I'm inviting you to please come back for a free second opinion if something doesn't feel right, look right, or smell right. You know, if it doesn't, if in your gut you wonder if you're getting the diagnosis that's right for you, please, because you're part of my patient family, please come back and I'll do a free second opinion for you. And it's amazing how many of them come back.
So help me understand this a little bit. This is part of your new patient process or part of your existing
If I have an existing patient that's leaving me for an in-network practice.
Okay.
Which happens. It happens from time to time. And
absolutely.
What's interesting is I've actually had some of them, they come back and it's almost like they've gone out and cheated on me, you know, like,
that's how they feel. Sometimes they're embarrassed to come back.
Yeah,
so I think one of the nice things about that is you let them know that you totally understand, you're empathetic with them, you understand the decision they're making, and that you're always here for them.
Yeah. You're part of my patient family. I stress that several times so that I make sure that they hear it. And then that way they feel like they can come back.
Now, what percentage of your patients come to you to allow you to tell them that? I'm assuming they call on the phone saying, hey, transfer my record somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and my front office team is amazing and they'll say that, you know, and then we also have, some other things. We're very careful about how we say it because we don't get in trouble with any of the, you know, organizations that overlook it or have an insurance company be mad at us. But I do some C training as a CERIT trainer. And I've had the opportunity to go into different offices and I see what they're doing with here. What they do in Texas, at least, is they say, OK, well, you know, this is the crown you're going to get on your insurance, which is usually a porcelain fused metal crown. If you want the upgrade crown, which is, you know, a one visit EMAX crown, then you're going to have to pay this and this and this. And typically it winds up being about the same what they're going to pay out of pocket in my practice because my fees are.
I think that's bordering on a little bit unethical.
I don't really. What's going on in the other offices?
Yes. No, not you.
Oh yeah. No. I mean, but we just, we kind of tell them, well, this is what you might expect. I also don't bill for, buildups and I don't bill for nitrous because I want people that want nitrous not to cheap out and not have nitrous. Cause you know,
it's a decision for you more than it is for them.
Yeah, exactly. I was an associate in a practice and I'm like, I wanted to go up and like start throwing 20s on the desk.
You wanted to make it rain.
Yeah. A
little okay. Cramp. So just for our listeners to hear, I think this is a fantastic point. When a patient chooses to leave your practice because of an insurance reason or even any reason, you or your team members always make it a point to let them know that you understand and mm-hmm. that you're always here for them.
Yeah.
And that you'll be happy to do a second opinion to make sure that, you know, because of the trust they have in you. Mm-hmm. So and that gives them the freedom to choose to come back to you if they're not happy with where they go to.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It works really well, too. I mean, you know, at this point, I feel very motherly towards my patients. I've been in the practice long enough that I've grown pretty close to some of them.
I mean, it's like 9 or 10 years now, right?
Yeah, we're getting on 9 years. And I really fully understand the whole idea of patient family. I didn't really get that when I came out of dental school. But man, I get it. You know, somebody gets sick.
You watch these people, the kids grow up. You watch. You hear about their vacations. You hear about all these mm-hmm. things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've got kids that were, gosh, they were in junior high. You know, and now they're getting married, and it's just bringing their spouses in. It's amazing. It's great. So,
do you think? let me ask you this other common thing I get. Does George? By the way, does George work in the office at all?
George works like a satellite. So what I've done that's interesting, since in 2014, I eliminated the office manager model. I got rid of the office manager position. And I have since evolved into George does business manager type job, but he's not physically on site. And so what I've done is I've brought in a lady, Alice Zini. She's my CPA. She works with me at the practice part time. She does bookkeeping, and she's awesome because I don't have to pay her as a CPA. I pay her as a bookkeeper, and she comes down, and so she does the accounts payable, and then she takes care of, you know, calling when a sprinkler head is busted, that kind of thing. And she also does my payroll. And the coolest part is that we've developed a system where there's oversight for deposits to hopefully eliminate any kind of embezzlement.
Okay.
Can
we talk about that real quick? I'm sorry to interrupt. I think that's
a
big thing. So to eliminate, which I think is a tough word to use, but to make it harder.
So
can you be more specific about what you're doing to help to try to curb that or to eliminate it or make yourself feel better?
Yeah. So George and Alice came up with this program. Alice was a forensic CPA in the SNL look back investigations that they did. So she's real sharp. And what we do is, it's basically the model I learned when I was on school board. I was on school board here for 10 years and we had an audit every year and I was on the audit committee. And it was nice working on school board, but it was also a little self-serving because I learned a lot about business by doing all the different positions I did with school board. And so what I learned is that the person that takes the money shouldn't be the one that counts the money and shouldn't be the one that deposits the money. So I have team members at the office that they develop the deposit. The deposit gets handed off to me. George makes the deposit and then Alice reconciles it. And so there's like three different steps in the depository process. And then we have different checks and balances for cash, checks, credit card, and those all get reconciled every day. And if you wanted me to share that with you, I could. George came up with a really cool, it's all on an envelope. So there's like an envelope, we print out different reports from Eaglesoft. There's the secondary deposit, which is the credit cards and the care credit. There's the daily deposit with cash. And then you have to reconcile that with what's in the envelope and then what you print off, whatever your merchant services account. Okay. So there's all these checks and balances.
If you're happy to share that, I would love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just whether it's a photograph of it or if it's a PDF file or whatever it is.
Okay.
That way we can put it in the show notes for people to download. Now, I want to get some clarity on this because I've never brought this subject up. So what I'm hearing from you is that each day there's a deposit that matches the deposit slip that pops out of Eaglesoft or whatever practice management system somebody's using.
Yeah.
So the credit card should match, the insurance should match, the insurance and the patient check should technically all go in as one deposit. So that way on a daily basis, everything should match. You know, one of the mistakes I made, and luckily I'm not aware of embezzlement. It may be unfortunate it's happened and I'm not aware of it. One of the mistakes I made early on was making deposits for like 3-4 days or randomly throughout the day. And then it never matched my practice management system.
Yeah. So that makes it hard to reconcile it.
It hard to keep track of where the hell it's going and where it's coming from.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is a beautiful system. And And there's different, and then there's a report in Eaglesoft that's, it's like daily, it's deposit reconciliation. So, I mean, it's like it all adds up. I mean, back in the day, I worked as a front office person on a temporary basis, and I did the pegboard system. And so you had to close it. You closed out the pegboard every day, and then you closed out at the end of the month. Same thing happens. I mean, basically what's on Eaglesoft is old pegboard
now, account. Now, you know what I just implemented about 2 months ago to make things a little bit easier is I've actually gone to multiple accounts for my business. And I'm not encouraging people to do this because I haven't done it long enough to know whether it's good or bad. So one of the challenges we were getting now is we get these EFT deposits.
Yeah,
and that's what really monkey wrenches my stuff up, okay? Yeah. Because now we're getting checks in the system that aren't here yet or we get put in, we get the EFT first and then get the EOB later.
Yeah.
And so what I've done now is I have a separate account for all medical insurances. So medical insurance payments will now go into a separate account.
Yep.
I have a separate account that credit card reimbursements come into. And I have a separate account for daily regular checks that we get. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is I will write a check, a budgeted check, to the main expense account. So ultimately I have three income accounts and one expense account. So that way... everything goes out of one account and the money comes into three different accounts. So I'm trying that because the EFT thing, while it sounds great to get my money a little bit faster,
it really
has become a little bit of an accounting nightmare for me.
Yeah. We have a separate EFT account that we set up and we've yet to receive a deposit to it. And I think it's because I'm not in network.
Yeah, maybe. So for example, Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina mandates it. I think TRICARE, but one of the government plans, MetLife is making us do it. And or how about this? You have to opt out and they make it a little bit hard to opt out.
I don't even know who we established it around the end of last calendar year. And I don't remember which company told us, if you want to receive payments from us, you better do this. And we set it up. And the other thing I use is a company called eAssist. They're a company that they handle all of my claims. So that's another thing that the office manager used to handle.
When you say claims, what do you mean by that?
So at the end of the day, everything that's posted, they process the insurance. So let me give you a little
process. Electronic claims?
It's a company out of Utah. It was started by a dentist. And we have our own account person that does the primary claim. So she actually attaches the my narratives and
x-rays and all that stuff
and then she makes sure that it goes out and then what's even the bigger thing for me is that when we receive an EOB and a check, we scan those, they reside on my server. She comes in every day and she takes EOBs and the checks, and then she will post them to the account. Because one of the things I found was that whoever was running, I had like three or four different groups of people that were running my front office, and the accounts were a mess. They were posting accounts to wrong patient accounts, posting checks like you get a bundled check, and they would post a $500 check to one family, and the Smith family and the Brown family and the Jones family would be on it. And the Jones and the Smith family would have no credit, and the Brown family
seen this become a problem is where people, like, we've accidentally or purposefully put families together, and they're not like a husband. They're not like kids.
Yeah.
They're like older kids. And then the dad makes a payment, and somehow when the daughter comes in, they're like, oh, you have a credit. And then next thing you know, the dad's credit goes to the daughter, and the dad comes in like, dude, I already paid you.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the areas where dental softwares do need to get better, or I don't know what the solution is. So they got to get better.
Well,
so eAssist, do they charge you a fee for this?
Yeah, there's a flat fee. And then you pay them more the more they collect. So then I have a secondary account manager that does all of the protests. And so they'll protest it three times if you have a claim denial. And the cool part is this company is nationwide, so they know the magic words for each different insurance company, like Delta.
So what do they charge you?
I think it's like $1,300 a month. for me. For the they do it based on your practice size.
Oh, so that ultimately it must be a percentage deal where they figure out what your average billings are and they come up with a number.
But when you tell patients, you know, we're going to do this and these people are paid more, the more they collect. I mean, it's a win-win for everybody, and it takes all of that.
In your scenario, because your patients are paying you. In my scenario, some of our patients would be like, why do I care if you get money or not?
They don't care. But it gets you, you don't have your people on the phone waiting forever, you know, like dying on hold, waiting to talk to someone.
So they do your insurance benefits checks too?
No, they don't do that yet.
Okay.
They don't do that yet. So I've got ladies up front that know how to do that by fax and then, you know, the death on hold thing for phone.
So have you been happy with this eAssist or other softwares like that or programs like that?
Yeah, I've been real pleased with that because I feel like...
go ahead.
Oh, that's what my office manager did mostly. And when you have it in one person, and that can be very good, but when you have a company...
You're talking about $15,000 a year.
Yeah, but when you talk...
Which is nothing.
Yeah, I know. And what was I paying an office manager?
I mean, one-third to one-fourth of a human being.
Right. I mean, I was like, when I did the math, I'm like, wow, this is like not even a $13 an hour employee.
So on top of that, the other benefit of this is, maybe this certainly would help us, is you don't have a human being there and you have one more parking spot.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training. Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Yeah, well, and you've got someone else inside your accounts. So what I hear about people getting, when you talk about, I don't know why I'm blanking out on the word, when people steal from you.
Right, embezzlement.
Embezzlement, okay. I don't understand how this happens, but there apparently are people that will take an insurance check from their employer and they deposit it in their
themselves,
own.
Yeah.
Right. So that doesn't happen. I mean, the only way it could happen would be if they intercepted it and hit it and it didn't get into, you know, the upload that day. But because I've got two people tracking that account, plus they've got a manager on top of them tracking my accounts, it would be identified pretty quickly, you know, because they reconcile who's been in, what's been charged. And, you know, I just don't see how it would be much more difficult. Somebody could probably come up with a way, because there's always a way. But it would be much more difficult to embezzle from me because I've got that oversight of eAssist in the practice.
All right. That's awesome.
And that's not to say I don't trust my current team.
No. This is about much more than that. It's not putting them in an unusual situation, not putting you. So what I'm hearing from this is certainly you've created checks and balances to minimize any type of shenanigans. You've learned to outsource delegatable tasks to allow your team to be smaller and to allow your team to hyper-focus on patient interaction and patient care instead of just some of these mundane things.
Being on the phone. Yeah. And so to that end, I was able to hire, I've got one lady up front. She came in as a temp. She's amazing. Her name is Mia. And she's kind of the lead up there just because she has more experience. But I've got one lady that worked at Nordstrom's for, I don't know, 10 years, had zero dental experience, but I hired her specifically for her customer service experience. And then I've got another lady that was the commander for Austin EMS. And so if I need somebody to get on the phone and talk about calling a prescription or, you know, so I've got this kind of different skill set going up there, and it really works well. I mean, it's the best customer service that we've been able to deliver. And it's really having that team up front has allowed me to grow the practice. Finally, I've finally kind of broke through that stop I had, you know.
Let's talk about that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this stop you had, talk to me about that. What's going on there?
So in 2000, so I inherited the team that was with the practice. And in 2012, the girl that was actually kind of the lead personality in the practice left to go be
Did you say lead personality?
Yeah, she was like, okay, so, you know, I had an office manager, but the person that was really the driver for production and collections was a lady that was working up front. She probably should have been the office manager. She went to a startup practice because the hours were better for her children. It was closer to her house, and she could be an office manager. We parted on good terms. And I didn't realize it at the time, but when she walked out the door, like all the systems walked out with her.
So what did you learn from that? What would you tell our listeners?
I learned a lot. I came in, I let the practice run on autopilot basically from 2008 to 2012. I tweaked a few things, you know, but I knew I bought a good successful practice. And so I didn't want to mess with it. I kind of watched it, and then I made a few refinements of things that I could see where, you know, like when I came in, they were making people come in for bleach trays, like upper trays, and then they come for lower trays. I'm like, nobody's got time for that.
Yeah,
you know, I know that was something they heard at a practice management seminar, like, ooh, look how much lighter your upper teeth are than your, that's a pain in the butt, you know?
It costs you money too, because you have to service those people every time.
Well, yeah. I mean, you turn over there. Anyway. But the driver personality in the front office left, and, at the end of 2013, the office manager left to go into another field. I hired another lady. She came in, she was great guns for about 6 months, and then she kind of, you know, lost interest. And then I just decided I'm not going to do the office manager thing. I actually had an office manager for 6 months at the beginning of 2014, and she was running off patients. So anyway, I guess my advice is really stay on top of the business end. And for me, what I've learned is I wear three hats. I'm the clinician. And that's my favorite hat because that's the one I know.
Well, that's what we went to school for.
Right. And then the business owner. And that's an easy one for me because I've got George, you know, the business owner guy, and I've got pretty good business instincts. And then the hardest one for me is the personnel hat. Staying on top. HR. Yeah. But
you think it's harder as a woman to for that? Because I always hear, I've had people, and this to me is it's a red flag. I've interviewed people for my office, and they're like, do you have any female dentists in your practice? Because I don't want to be around that.
Right.
And that's a red flag to me personally.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think for me now in my 50s, a lot of the folks I'm hiring are in their 30s and 20s. So they kind of look at me as a mom. But I think, yeah, when you're a younger dentist, I think it's tougher. I had team members telling me when I was younger, you know, everybody thinks you're standoffish. They think you think you're better than everyone else because you're the doctor. I don't think they'd go to a male dentist and say that. I might be wrong, but and one of them actually said, you don't cuss around us. You need to cuss. You need to loosen up. You need to have some drinks with us. I mean, and some of my girlfriends and I talked about it, and I said, it's almost like I'm either a bitch or I'm their buddy, you know? And so
You're the buddy, they don't want you to be their buddy, right?
Right. I don't want you to be my buddy. I want you to be the bitch. I don't want you to be the bitch. I want you to be my buddy. But I have to think, I mean, you know, I only have the paradigm of being a female dentist, but I have to think it would be different, you know?
Okay. All right. So back to this, I want to point out something here. One of the things that we have, that's been very important to me that we are failing on in our practice is you made the comment that when XYZ person left, the systems mm-hmm. walked out the door with her.
Yes. And that's a fear
for so many owners.
Yeah.
Myself included.
Yeah. And that's like the thing you don't have time for. And the thing I saw in the school district too was that the systems weren't written down. Same thing. It was a, it's a small, I live in a community, Pflugerville is a growing community. But they had good people, but the systems weren't like recorded. And so I asked two separate office managers, I need you to write down, you know, how to, like from the patient walks in the door, this is how we check them in. You know, I mean, I wanted all of that stuff recorded, you know, because when somebody
gotten that done,
actually the, some of it's done. It's a work. There's so
that's
much
more
to
than
do.
Me. Like yeah, I literally set aside money to reward people to make this happen. And, and I haven't been able to make it happen. I want to go. I didn't mean to interrupt. I did mean to interrupt, but I think the challenge isn't to write it down. I think it's in today's world is to create videos. Tutorial videos of how team members do things and just have the team member record themselves. And in today's world, from the software side, you can do screen captures of how they do, like how to make an appointment, you know, how to do this in EagleSoft or how to do that. And even you could have eAssist do that to, for a certain degree on their end. So ultimately, in a perfect world, I think if we could create a video training suite of how somebody things work in your practice so that if somebody's out, it's a little bit easier because writing it down.
I know that's the thing. It's like, Vicky and I, Vicky's the lady I was telling you that was commander of Austin ENS. She's a couple years older than me. So we like it on paper. Right. But all the new people. Yeah. And I've got
it's
my
not
daughter.
Just new people. The other thing about, if there's something about video, you can see the inflection and somebody can tell you how important it is. Yeah. And it's easier to for them to, they could, in a way, they could also, somebody could digest it while they're driving the car, not watching the video, but listening to the audio out of the video. The other thing with having it written versus having it in video, you could create a website or a backend part of your website to where people can view it at home. You can onboard team members that way. So this is an important thing for me.
I love this. I'm so glad you said this because my daughter's home from college. She's got a degree in music production.
Yeah, you were telling me that.
Yeah. So yeah, guess what she's going to get to do now.
Yeah, no, and that's awesome. You know, but I think ultimately one of the things I would say is I would encourage you to have your team members do it.
Down to room
setups. Yeah. Down to how you know, tear down a implant tray after an implant, which parts don't get thrown away versus which parts. I can't tell you how many scan posts we've had thrown away from stuff like that.
Yeah, no, we just had something. I was like, we were putting the implant kit back together, and I'm like, there's about a $100 part somewhere, and it was in the little strainer.
There's no part that's less than $100 in an implant kit. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so that's a great idea. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to put my daughter to work videotaping.
Yeah,
so
or
that's
maybe
what I'm saying.
If nothing else, directing people.
Yeah, yeah. Have her behind the camera, and then I'll just have the list, and she'll just go in and say, okay, you know, Bree, you need to do this. Corey, you need to do that.
When I had written this down, I had gone through, like, how to dispense home sleep tests, how to download the home sleep tests, you know, how to do follow-up calls, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And I'm just failing at it. And part of it's because I've gotten tired of harping on people. And quite honestly, it's hard. We got a busy day and, you know, we run relatively lean and mean team wise and all of that. So, but I think it's a great idea for us to do. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about technology. You had mentioned that, so when you bought the practice, it wasn't super technology advanced.
Well, I mean, for a practice of its age, he established the practice in 70. Well, he built the building in 78. So I had to drag it into the high tech era. The building wasn't grounded. Mm-hmm. We found that out. That was fun. So we're all digital. We do the crowns in one day and then implants using the cone beam.
So what made you get into CEREC and cone beam?
Well, okay, so that's a fun story. I don't know if you know Jimmy Studinski or not, but
I do. He's the CEREC rep in Austin.
Yeah, Jimmy's awesome. So Jimmy sends out a flyer that he's going to give a free Krups coffee maker.
Oh, I remember this program.
Remember this? Yeah, this was 2012. And I had seen CEREC, and I wasn't interested in Red Cam. I wasn't interested in the learning curve. You know, I just didn't think the software was there. So the flyer comes through, and I was actually looking at the iTero because I was wanting to do. I knew I wanted to do digital impressions. And so I said, well, and excuse my language, but I said, I'll whore myself out for the coffee machine, but I don't think I'm going to buy one of those things. So Jimmy comes over and it's raining and he's bringing the milling unit in through the back of my office. It's on a little, like a little wagon. And I literally said to him, I don't know why you're bringing that damn thing in here, because I'm not buying a mill. I just want to look at this, you know. In fact, I'm about like this far away from buying an Itero. So he goes, oh, well, Dr. Graves, you know, it's raining and don't make me take this back outside. He's a brilliant sales guy. So he comes in and he sets up the whole unit. And this was on Blue Cam. And I think, I don't know which version of the software it was. And it was just crazy easy. And so I start looking at the pro forma he had. And literally my office manager, the one I inherited with the practice, was having me sign checks. And she was pissed off that I was looking at this. Because, you know, she had this attitude that, you know, I was going to buy something and it would just sit in the corner, because I guess that's what her experience had been. But she handed me the lab bill, and I look at it and I sign it, and it was more than my payment would be. And I knew that I had like a 30% send back rate, because it turned out my lab was sending things to China. I found out a few years later. In spite of the fact that I would call them and say, you know, who's doing the cases with the masking tape on it? Because those are the ones that are going back. You know, I don't know who the tech is, but get my stuff off that bench. And those were the ones that were going to China. They were outsourcing them. I found out through the grapevine later. But anyway, that was a blessing, because I was like, what the hell? You know, I could do better than a 33% send back rate. And so I jumped into Blue Cam with both feet. I signed on the bottom line at the end of March, and I was doing single visit crowns in June.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, one thing about me is like, when I get my head wrapped around something and I'm going to do it, you know, it's like, I'm just real stubborn. I'm going to make it happen.
Oh my God. You are just like a typical wife.
Yeah.
All right. So you bought CEREC, you've been happy with it. When you first bought it, all you were doing were crowns with it.
I was doing crown. Well, actually, Todd Ehrlich's here in town, and right. He was a fantastic mentor for me. In fact, Jimmy, because I told him I didn't want to get into it and get kind of cut out, and he arranged for Todd to do my C training, okay. Which was great, because I had Benji for B training and then Todd for C training.
And B training is the 2-day basic training.
Yeah.
C training, when you purchase CEREC through Patterson, they provide a clinician that will come into your office for half day, full day, something along that line, and work with you on patient cases live, which is fantastic. And then D training is what's known as the advanced training. And that's where you would go to Scottsdale to see Samir, Raleigh to see me, to see Todd in Austin, or James Klim in Santa Rosa, California. Those are the main D trainers. Yeah. There's some other ones as well. Those are your options there. So when what I mean by that, back, I remember 2012 pretty well. At that point, CEREC was an indirect restoration deal. It was essentially crowns, onlays.
Yeah.
Pretty much that was it.
Well, so Todd had figured a workaround for screw-mintable implants. So we were doing implants on stock abutments.
Right. You could do it off of model.
Yeah. Before the software was there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which was great. And okay.
Now what are you doing with CEREC?
Oh my gosh. I was up there at the office the other yesterday doing an implant bridge. So I did, and again, it was indirect. But
you made custom abutments.
Two custom abutments, scan off the model, and made and a real.
Do you do bridges ever with the machine for real? I mean, for natural teeth?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that wasn't possible in 2012.
No.
And
no,
that was just a software upgrade at the end of the day, correct?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
And with then you're Maryland doing bridges. Implant crowns.
Oh yeah, yeah. Implant crowns,
surgical guides.
Surgical guides. I don't mill the surgical guides just because I actually like the printed ones better, and I don't have enough time to play around with the printer. I send them to Burbank out in California.
And then they print them for you.
Yeah, I always feel like I tease my patients like, okay, so I'm gonna develop. I show them the whole process because they really love it. I have a lot of techies in my practice.
It's certainly in Austin,
Oh yeah, yeah, and I'll say, okay, so then I'm gonna send it to SciCat in Germany, and I always feel like I'm a teenager trying to sneak like a beer into the movie theater, you know, trying to sneak something by the Germans because you know there's always something that they come back with, right?
No, they're very very particular.
Yeah. And then once I get the, like you taught in the class was you, okay, I'm okay with this. I'm okay with that. They come up with something else like, oh, you know, Dr. Graves, we need to bring this to your attention. They keep upping the bar, but I like that. I really appreciate the way that they go through the different plans, and then I just like the system.
What else do you do with Sarah? Are you doing anterior restorations with it?
Oh yeah, yeah. So what it's allowed me to do, I don't know if you met Ida, my assistant, that she came out to North Carolina when we did the cone beam.
Yeah, okay, I remember her.
Yeah, Ida retired from dentistry. She's going into technology. She's she's completing her education, and she's going to go work for one of the tech companies. But she was actually a dentist in Mexico for 10 years, and she came to me after I'd been working with her for a while, and she said, "You're going to be the one that rebuilds my mouth." She had ortho for 11 years. She had orthognathic surgery, and so we opened her bite. And that gave me – so the technology that I had gave me the confidence to do like full mouth rebuilds. So I've been doing,
and
I try
you can
to do
segment them out.
Yeah. So we'll do like anterior, posterior. I always tell patients it's a three-legged stool. We'll do one side, you know, left, right, and then anterior. But I've done some really nice cases. I'm very, very pleased with them.
That's awesome. And then you got into cone beam about 3-4 years later.
Right. The cone beam was purchased and installed at the end of 14, and we really ramped up with it at the beginning.
What made you do that? What was your driving force?
So the Panna was dying, and again, it was a sales thing. They were offering $40,000 for a Panna, and it turns out, oops, it was supposed to be a digital Panna. Mine was a film-based Panna, but they honored it. And I was like, you know, it was one of the I saw it as a revenue source. I mean, I know it's a big expense, but I'm telling you, I don't trust 2D at all anymore. I don't trust if somebody comes in and they've got an upper tooth that's hurting them. We just put them in the scanner, and I'm like you, everybody gets a scan because you just don't know what you're going to find.
And your patients have taken well to it?
The patients are very receptive to it. They like it. I think eventually it's going to be the standard of care.
How are you charging for the 3Ds?
It depends. You know, we're typically charging it as a Panna.
Okay. So 110, 120, whatever the dollar amount is.
Yeah. Like 130.
Okay. $130. Yeah. Well, yeah. The money, I mean, but you're charging it as a pan. So that way your patients aren't suddenly paying $200-$300 for something.
Yeah.
And then they're I don't want that. So you just say it's what they've already been used to. Just pay me that dollar amount. It's a much better, it's a 3D Panorex, let's call it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you, the thing is, you don't, I mean, again, do you want them spending the money on the X-ray, on the diagnostic end, or do you want them spending money on a big case? Because if you can get them to see in three, I had one patient actually, he pointed at the scan and he goes, "That tooth needs to come out." It was like a upper second molar. And I was like, yeah, I had eroded into the sinus. Sinus is all full of mucus. And he goes, "No, one of my friends, their cousin died of a bad tooth. That tooth needs to come out." You know,
those patients should scare us all a little bit. Are you doing any medical billing?
We did some. We didn't have a lot of success with it. We're gonna do. You know, we're gonna try it again.
Texas is a good state for medical billing.
That's what I hear. Yeah. Yeah. What we're trying to do is, you know, Jeff Ryan and I are good friends.
Yeah, I know Jeff. Yeah.
So that's one of my questions at the end about sleep, you know, the business.
Come back to that then. Sleep. No problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
let's talk about this. How about this? So talk to me about, what's some of the best advice or what that you could give to young dentists, male or female, that you've learned over the years?
So the best advice would be to discover what your strengths and weaknesses are and, you know, build on your strengths and on the weaknesses, find someone that complements you, whether it's in the business department or like I don't do endo. I am terrible at root canals, so I send them all out. I don't like them. I don't do them well, and I just refer them out because the learning curve would be too steep for me to make that a profit center. Find out what you like and take good CE so that when, as you become more confident, you can offer more services. Because I sat down at one point and I'm like, man, all I do is, night guards, composites and crowns. And that was about
hygiene services.
Right. Right. And that was about the time that I added the digital, I added the cone beam. I mean, we did a lot of surgery in dental school. I worked as an oral surgeon's assistant, so I love surgery. So it was a natural for me to go into implants. And then Jeff's been nagging me to do sleep for a long time. So I'm getting into that.
What has that meant for you by adding implants to your practice and things?
Oh my gosh. So adding implants, we had a patient in the other day that I think I was the sixth or seventh dentist he saw. Everybody's telling him to do all on fours. The guy's 41. And I'm like, you don't need all on fours. You can do all on fours because that's quick and easy. But what I suggest is that we take out these bad teeth. Patient had been in an accident. And we took out basically from canine to second bicuspid. And so we're going to do an anterior 4-unit implant bridge and then a 3-unit bridge. And I did the basic surgery, the extractions and the bone grafting. My surgeon, I'm going to let the surgeon do the implants because he's going to be playing around with the sinus over here. And then I'll do the restorations.
That's awesome.
I would never have had that case come through my practice if I wasn't
I'll disagree with you, Cynthia. You would have that case come through your practice. You would have never done a case like that.
I would have referred it. Yeah. I would have referred it out. I would have sent it to a prosthodontist. And I've got a good prosthodontist.
But I think that's such an important point that mm-hmm. I try to get people to understand is these cases are walking in and out of your practice every single day.
Yeah.
And when you don't have the eyes for it, you don't diagnose it. You don't see it. You send it somewhere else. And not that that's wrong or that shouldn't be done, but then your patients, they don't want to go. They're looking for a solution. They want it to be easy. And you have the advantage of having in-house specialists. So I want to come to that, which I think is ingenious, which in fact, we're looking for a periodontist right now to come to our office twice a month. Because one is a lot of people don't refer out because they don't want to lose the revenue. In your scenario, referring out in, you gain 50% of the revenue.
Yeah. I have a guy that comes and does third molars too. And that's his practice model.
You need to get somebody to come in and do your endo that way.
Yeah. I know. If I was having a root canal, I'd want it done through a microscope.
Okay. Then buy the microscope.
Yeah. I guess. Well, I mean,
find the traveling endodontist, buy the microscope base, and all they have to do is bring the oculars and the top of it, and they can do it that way. Because in today's world, you can get a quality microscope for $15,000.
Okay. Oh, really? Wow. Oh, yeah. I thought they were more than that. Wow.
15 to 20 grand, you can get a quality microscope.
Yeah.
And then, think about this. So just do the numbers for me, Cynthia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is just have George go back to your practice and figure out how many root canals you referred out in 2016 or so far this year.
Yeah.
And just imagine keeping 50% of that revenue.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
The microscope is a non-issue financially in that scenario.
Yeah, it pays itself. That's the thing. It's like when you make these investments, they pay themselves off. I mean, I look at it as, how much is my, kind of like going to the car dealer and they're like, oh, well, what's it going to take to get you in this car? What's my monthly payment? And am I going to realize that amount of revenue? And that's just a no brainer. The answer is a resounding yes, most of the time.
That's awesome. All right. So outside of Sarek and cone beam, okay, what technology would you say that you truly couldn't live without in your practice?
Oh, wow. Digital x-rays, but I mean, that's kind of a standard of care.
Yeah. I mean, that at this point we're 60-70%.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just trying to think.
Okay, let me ask you this instead. Let's not even think about big technology. What about like little softwares or these little things? I call them the couple hundred dollar a month deals that we can add to our practices.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Weave.
Okay. So talk to me about that.
So we added,
I had not a great experience with them personally.
Oh,
but,
really?
I want to hear about your experience.
So we started with them a little more than a year ago.
I was with them 3-4 years ago, but okay.
Yeah. It's a totally different ball game right now. I mean, it's a totally, you should give them a second look. You really should. Jeff Ryan again.
My wife will kill me if I bring in an IP based phone again. That's okay.
Oh, y'all had issues with it. Yeah, and see, I think it depends on where you are. I mean, if you've got sketchy internet.
No, we don't. We have 300 megabits. Anyway, so talking about Weave.
So we have, since Weave has expanded their services, we've eliminated solution reach.
Okay.
And they're basically doing the contact interface with the patients is a lot better than what we had before with solution reach. And
what is Weave doing for you? It's not just a phone system.
No, it's not just a phone system. It ties into EagleSoft And so when a patient calls, it pops up on the screen, and it looks like an iPhone interface. It literally looks like an iPhone, and it'll have the patient's photo, and it'll say when their last visit was, and then family members, and you know, if they owe money. That way, when you've got them on the phone, you're like, oh yeah, so would you like to make a payment on your account?
And then, it'll tell you about family members that aren't appointed, outstanding treatment.
Yeah. And so you get all that information. So it's just literally, you don't have to sit there and go through all the different charts.
And it does this through caller ID, I assume?
Yeah, it's like caller ID. Yeah, okay. So you have to launch the Weave app, and then it pops up, a little screen pops up, and that information comes up when the patient is calling in.
You don't even have to technically, majority of the time, ask who is this. You kind of know. I could just answer the phone and say, hey, Cynthia, what's up?
Yeah, hey.
Hey, Cynthia, what's up? You owe me $50.
Yeah. Fork it over.
Yeah.
You can also send out text messages when you're in the office, reminding people of their balances. And according to their studies, they have a higher percentage of people actually contacting you at that point to make payment on the accounts.
All right, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then the portion that we really find to be the most successful is there's a texting interface. And so unlike with Solution Reach, when you text or telephone them, the patient knows where it's coming from. With Solution Reach, it had this kind of random,
weird
number. So we've been very pleased with them.
What do you pay monthly for that roughly?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
$300?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, no. It's like $300.
Okay, so it's in that $100 to $300 ballpark.
Yeah. And because it replaced Solution Reach.
And your phone system.
And my phone system. My phone I was paying $400 a month for that. So, I mean, it was a no-brainer to go there.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, I got a last thing I want to talk about before you ask me questions. Okay. You've been fantastic. Talk to me about your goals. What do you want to do say 5-10 years from now?
So I have a building that was built in 1978 by two dentists. It's a beautiful building.
So it's 40 years old.
It's 40 years old. We've done a lot of internal upgrades to it. I bought it in 2012 from the two dentists that built it. And, we replaced all the mechanicals and did some upgrades with the electrical, as we talked about earlier. I have four operatories that are not being used.
They're in
the building. So when you walk in, there's like a common reception area and a business area. On the right side is my clinic, where I have five open bay ops. And on the left side is four open bays. They abandoned Pelt & Crane equipment that I couldn't give away. I was contacting people in Mexico.
So like, there were two dentists in this building?
Yeah, there were two dentists.
So that it was like space share kind of deal.
Yeah. But you can't really rent out the other side to another practice because you share the common core, you share the sterilizing area, you share the break room,
that's a space share.
Yeah. And so I have the opportunity to expand the practice, and I've been wanting to for a long time. Of course, I'm going to expand capacity on the side I'm in. And I'm at the point right now where I'm almost busy enough to bring in an associate. And this is one of my questions for you, is like, how do you make that jump? You know, but my goal is in the next 5 years to have at least an associate. I've got my eye on somebody. That's fantastic. But
are you a stalker?
Yeah. I came home from a training. I said, George, I found my associate today. they're working as an employee right now. But anyway, so I want to expand the practice. And then, you know, eventually, within the next 10 years, take it where I'm less involved in daily production and more involved in actually growing the business and kind of overseeing the practice. And then, you know, transition it when I'm in my early to mid 60s. I mean, my goal for me is to be placing 3 or 4 implants or restoring 3 or 4 implants a week, and then doing one big case a month. Okay. And I did the math on that. And
that's the same production you're already doing.
Yeah. If I can do that, then I bring in someone to do the meat and taters, you know, the class two composites.
Well, we call it the nuts and bolts. But yeah.
We should call it like
meat and taters. That's awesome. All right. So you want to what I heard here from you is you want to expand your practice to be able to bring another dentist in, whether it's an associate partner, whatever it is, that's somewhat irrelevant. You want to become a specialist within your practice where your focus is on very specific procedures and or specific patient and patient cases so that you can have more free time and be able to focus on business growth and the management side of your practice.
So
what prevents you from doing that now?
Just my own fear, you know? Yeah, I mean, because that's what Mia keeps telling me, you know, doctor, just bring in somebody. I'm like, but for me, having been an associate where I was expected to grow the practice.
How would your patients react to you not doing their dentistry?
If it's somebody I trust, you know, the first thing I do is sit in that person's chair and let them do some work on me. So then I can say, you know, this person's been my dentist. And that's what John Finley did for me. It was amazing. I'm going to get emotional. Yeah, I'm like 2 months out of school and he sits down and says, I want you to do these incisal composites on 8 and 9. Oh my God, I was so nervous, you know, but then he was able to tell patients, you know, I was 24, I looked really young. And he was able to say, she's my dentist, you know, she does my dental work. And 30 years later, I'm still his dentist. But man, that's powerful stuff when you can say that to your patients. Yeah, that's definitely a transition, you know.
I think so you're afraid of, okay. So let me ask you some pointed questions about this. Okay. And please tell me if I'm, anyway, so pointed questions. So I think the fear that you have or what holds you back is that you're worried about losing income.
Yeah, that's part of it. I want to see if I will tell you this in 2017, I've had 3 of my best months ever. So half of the months have been record months for me. So I'm definitely, and it's not been.
Are you finding that you're working more or harder?
Yeah, I'm spending more time at the office, definitely.
Okay. And that's unacceptable, to be quite honest with you.
Right. And that's what I told George. I'm like, you know, I'm at the point where I really need an associate, but.
What is an associate? Don't think about keeping the associate busy. Okay. So one of the things I did better this time with an associate, I asked how much they need to produce.
Right.
To me, I look at it backwards. So how much do you think an associate needs to produce for you to bring somebody in and confident that you're going to be able to keep them happy? You know, ultimately, happiness is about some people just want to be busy, which I don't think is the right answer. And some people equate being busy to making a certain dollar amount. Right. So ultimately, you just got to work backwards and figure out how much they want to make. And you know, my associate, listen, if I can do $50,000 to $60,000 a month in production collections, I'll be super happy. I'm like, all right, let's make that our goal. I found that I'm able, so mentally I said to myself, hey, listen, if I can peel 50 to 60 grand off of myself, how would that affect me? And how long would you peel that off of yourself, Cynthia, before you would be able to replace it with those 3-4 implants a week because you're doing better hygiene checks, you're focusing on marketing, you're focused on community development, things that you're unable to do right now. Especially right now, you're probably more tired, you're probably a little bit more burned out, you're probably a little bit more of those things because you're having your best months ever, but you're having some of your best months ever because you're working more.
Yeah.
And, I would look at it from that perspective in terms of bringing somebody in. It's been one of the best decisions I've ever made because it's afforded me to take 10 to 12 weeks off a year. Mm-hmm. I'm able to work more closely towards becoming the quote unquote specialist in my practice. I'm not there yet. I mean, I still do some fillings. I would like to stop doing fillings and crowns and all of that stuff.
Yeah. We didn't even do class 2 composites when I graduated. So that's like my least favorite thing.
Yeah. And it's also your least paying thing. Well, at least for you, you get paid reasonably well. I get paid $120 to $150 for composites.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. See your reaction there. So I looked at it this way. I just asked the person, how much do you want to make, basically?
Yeah.
How much does that equate? And then I said, okay, how in the world do I make it happen?
Well, and then the other thing is that there's the intangible of being someone that can be mentored. I mean, you're an instructor and you've got a lot of clinical knowledge to impart to someone. And I think there's some allure there. It's not like being an associate as I've been in some, I've been an associate in a lot of different situations because I followed Mr. Wonderful around. And so, you know, it was rewarding in some areas because I was in a Panky practice in Missouri and I learned a lot from those guys. Actually, when I was sitting in Frank Spear's class last spring, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen that. I was in a Panky practice, you know, the functional impression that they used to do. It's very, very weird. So I had a lot of really good, valuable experiences. I wasn't making the money, but, you know, it was kind of like CE. So there's you can't put a dollar value on that, but whoever joins me is really going to learn a lot. Because I do enjoy that. I enjoy that collaborative style of practice. So, yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I'm actually trying to schedule a dinner with this individual so that we can sit down and I can say, so, you know, I know you're not happy where you are.
Could you be halftime happy there?
Right. My clinic is dark on Fridays, except for when I do big cases, you know, we'll go down there and open the clinic. It's not even once a month right now, probably once a quarter, we'll do a rehab. But if I could, if I could focus my efforts on doing more of that right-sided dentistry, as Paul Homily calls it, then I could grow the practice. Right now, I come home exhausted and I tell George, I'm like, God, I wish I had an extra week each month just to do CE and then do things I want to market the practice.
And one of the challenges I fell into this trap in 2013 and 14 and early 15 is one of the traps of being busy in your practice is you stop learning because you don't create the time and you don't have that energy to learn.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's problematic there is the things that you learn and that you want to implement become even harder to implement when you're quote unquote busy. To me, there's some negatives of being busy. I don't mind being booked out. I don't mind having good solid days, but being busy is not a good thing in my book.
Yeah. May, I saw you in Arizona at that sleep conference. And then the next week I came back and my server crashed.
Yeah.
And I pretty much spent all of May just focused on getting the server back up to speed. And oh my God, it was just not fun. And I had plans of getting a watch pat and starting to send home. I mean, I was going to come up with this really nice, you know, in Texas, we can't legally diagnose, which I don't guess you can anywhere else.
No, you can't diagnose anywhere, but yeah.
But I wanted to do screenings and have like a nice, you know, like something printed, almost like a dual folder, you know, here's your test and then have, you know, their Epworth sleepiness and then the stop bang. And that way, when they went to the physician, they went like fully, you know, hey, this dentist really has it together, you know? So talk to me.
So what questions, I think your questions you have for me revolve around sleep.
So yeah, that's my question is like, of course, Jeff and them, they do how to put it into practice. But for me, I don't really see it. I mean, it's kind of the new, what used to be TMJ, then it was cosmetic dentistry, you know, veneers.
There's implant dentistry, and now it's sleep dentistry.
Yeah, like sleep dentistry. For me, I don't see it really as a practice builder so much. I mean, like people coming to me because I'm a sleep dentist, because everybody in town's a sleep dentist now. But it's the return on it. For me, it's the service to my patients.
So what's holding you back from implementing this?
It's just a matter of time. It's just timing, you know, making sure I've got it squared away and I'm launching it the appropriate way.
I hear this all the time, Cynthia, and it drives me nuts a little bit. The best time is now, because every day, So look, every day two sleep apneics walk through your practice.
Oh no, I know that. I mean,
every day you wait, that's two people you can't touch.
Yeah.
And I think the number's higher than two. I think statistics bear out that between 25% and 40%, 25% to 33% of people have some mild or moderate sleep apnea.
Yeah.
I hear this all the time. I mean, have you taken your team to the trainings and things like that?
Yeah. No.
In my opinion, okay, implementation doesn't happen without team involvement. Because at the end of the day, you're going to pop in on Monday and you're going to be motivated to do something and your team's going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Your hygienists are going to be like, man, you already have me talking to patients about all this stuff. Now you want me to add one more thing to talk about. And then they're going to ask the patient, do you snore? The patient will be like, no. And then they're going to be like, all right, let me scrape your teeth. You know, and they're not going to ask the secondary questions that create that level of awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and on top of that, I've had personnel changes in the hygiene department.
Yeah. And that's the best time in a way, right?
Yeah, no. And me up front, she worked in a practice where they did sleep apnea. It was May derailed me. And then I just came back in June and just kind of got back into the grind. You know how it is. You come back and you're like, woohoo, I'm going to do this. I just need to get it done.
How can I help you get going?
Well, I mean, so I have some questions. So if I do, and I tend to overthink things.
Yeah, that's a lot of us.
Yeah. So if I send a patient home with a sleep study and then they come back and they've got moderate sleep apnea, I'm going to put it on them to go to the doctor, you know, I'll inform them. And of course, you know, I can send something follow up, but I guess my question are legally, what's my obligation at that point?
So the first couple of things, I want to make a couple of blanket statements here. Okay. Is every state's a little bit different. Okay. Yeah. In terms of whether or not the dentist can send home an HST. Okay. The vast majority of states, it's not an issue. Okay. Right. Number two, a dentist cannot diagnose obstructive sleep apnea or any form of sleep apnea. Okay. So ultimately a physician has to diagnose.
Right.
Now there are three ways that you can get a diagnosis. Okay. One is you can refer the patient over to a sleep physician to do a face-to-face and to do the diagnosis for you.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you can work with a local sleep physician who will remote read your HST for you.
Right.
And the diagnosis.
Right.
And so that's what the model we're using. So we work with the local sleep physician. He'll remote read the HSTs and he will say, listen, this patient, pretty straightforward. Go for an oral appliance. Hey, this patient, let me at least do a face-to-face with this patient. And if they're not interested in a CPAP or if they don't qualify for CPAP, we'll send them back for an oral appliance. Okay.
That's cool.
Or your third method is if you don't have a relationship with a local sleep physician, you can employ third-party remote physicians to do the reading and diagnosis for you.
Right. Okay. And the one study I was looking at, they do that. They offer that.
So ultimately, in theory and technicality, once you get the diagnosis from the physician, you're ready to move forward.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so the challenge in number one is where you send every patient that you screen to the physician is they don't go,
they get lost, or they don't
come back. Okay.
Well,
and I don't mind if the patient doesn't come back because if the CPAP is the right thing for them, that's the right thing for them.
Yeah.
But not every sleep physician is oral appliance friendly and probably you wouldn't refer them to somebody that isn't dentist friendly necessarily.
Yeah.
But I think patients don't want to go from practice to practice. The same reason you have an in-house periodontist
is because
your patients don't want to go from place to place.
Yeah. And even with him, patients have said, why can't you do the implant? That's what got me into implants. Why can't you do the implant? Like you'd be my first. I don't care. They didn't care.
Everybody has to lose it sometime, right?
Well, my daughter was the first one, you know. But so the idea of doing this, the take home, the HST, it's something I want to do. I've already got the list. I actually started developing the list, and then we had the server crash, and
stop developing lists and stuff.
I know. Just do it. I need to get on the phone. And actually, the guy that's the rep lives around the corner from my dad, Joel, that's with the WatchPack.
So WatchPack's a great company. Listen, they're a great, great company. They have a great product. My issue with the WatchPack is it costs you $60 each time you use it.
Yeah, the disposables. Yeah.
Okay, the disposable is $60. So we utilize Medibite from Braybon. It's about a $7 to $8 disposable fee each time. It's not as necessarily as easy to use as the WatchPat, but there's a big difference in $8 and $60.
Yeah.
So when something's $7 or $8, I'm willing to screen people more readily on my own dime than when something's $60 to me.
Well, we were going to come up with a program where they would pay me a fee that would include the take home tests and then a comb beam.
Yeah.
And so
we charge $100 for the HST, but my team has permission to give it away for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because my cost is $7 or $8. So I'm comfortable eating that. So that's my only thought for you on the WatchPad. It's a great product. Okay.
Yeah.
It's very well respected, But, you know, I just worry about the disposables cost in that, in the term of, in the sense of being able to screen more and more patients.
Okay. Was it, is the one
you're, talk to me more about sleep. What are the other questions?
Because so my other question is, if you're getting, you know, and I know we're really legally not supposed to talk about the fees, but say you're getting between $2,000 and $2,500 for the appliance, how many visits are you, how much time are you using? And then compare that to doing implants.
Okay, so, you know? So this is somewhere where I think we can, I think that mentally you're going to have to open, I wouldn't say open your mind, but be different about this. So what we teach and what we employ, what we try to do is, I believe in a champion model.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, I think a successful sleep practice will have two champions. Mm-hmm. One will be a front office person and one will be a clinical person.
Yeah.
And they will do 90% of the work for you.
I got you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my role in our treatment of the majority of our patients, okay? Now, there are certainly one-off patients that are a little bit more complicated, TMD, mm-hmm. things like
yeah.
that, okay? But the general average patient, I spend about half an hour with them through the course of treatment. I'll be there for the initial consultation, you know, determining that they're a good candidate, to go over some of the risk benefits and alternatives, to make sure we're not getting into a patient I don't want to work on.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
my assistant will take it from there. They'll do the digital impressions. They'll do the bite. And in the beginning, I did the bite and let her do it, or I had her do it, and then I double-checked it. You know, and we have a good relationship where, if the bite isn't, if she's uncomfortable or not getting the bite she wants, she'll pop me in and I'll do it. So it's totally run by a team member.
Yeah. Okay? So you're talking about the George Gauge for the bite, right?
George Gauge or the Airway Metrics or Lucia Jig, whatever end up people use.
I got you.
If you're neuromuscularly tensing people, there's so many different ways of doing it. You know, so for me, it's very much team driven.
Okay.
So when we're averaging anywhere between $2,000 and $2,500 per appliance, sometimes a little bit north of that. Honestly, for me, it's about on average, if I average it out. So we did like 150 appliance. We'll do like 150 to 180 appliances this year. On average, I spend about half an hour with each patient.
Okay.
And majority of them are social visits.
Yeah. And so for delivery, you have to be there for delivery, right? I mean,
what do
I guess
you mean by be there? I have to be in the office.
Okay.
I have to, the legal obligation is for any treatment to be done, at least in the state of North Carolina, a dentist has to be on site.
Yeah.
So I don't have to be there. My associate can be there.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there's the associate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So the way we try to work it is, so we moved Liz, my chairside assistant, from being my assistant to running our sleep program.
And
to me, it's night and day when you have it. You know, that's not all she does, but she's in charge of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So on Thursdays and Fridays, she tries to do all the deliveries on Thursdays and Fridays because I'm not there, or, you know, the associate's there. She tries to do follow-ups when we need me on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Our patients that are pretty straightforward, she tries to see them on Thursday and Friday to minimize, you know, the interruptions to my schedule. She tries to do records on many of the patients when I'm not there. So it works out really well. And the front office team member, their role essentially from a champion perspective is to deal with medical insurance.
Yeah.
So Melissa in our office deals with medical insurance. You could third party that out with a company like Houtan or other companies out there.
Yeah.
You can third party it out. So ultimately, you know, and I'll give a plug, and I'm not telling that you need to do this, but here's a plug to our listeners is so we've developed our sleep training around that concept.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So around the concept that it's a dentist, a front office team member, and a back office team member.
Yeah.
So we have two levels to our sleep program. Our sleep 101 is really for the practice that's early on in the sleep journey that wants to learn some of the fundamental science. Where I tell people that our sleep 101 program is great is I think every dentist that's coming or has been should need to send their hygienists. Because 50% of our patients, of our sleep patients come from a hygiene department.
Yeah.
So we've worked really hard on getting our hygienists to create awareness and to then refer our patients to Liz to, you know, kind of move the patient through the process if it's the right patient. And then we have our second program, which is our hands-on program. Sleep 101 is a lecture program. And then our hands-on program, I'm going to rename it to help people understand. But ultimately, that's the Champions program. That's mm-hmm. where you bring the assistant, and the assistant will do the digital. We teach them how to do the Sarah compression, how to do the bite.
Okay.
They do it all. They do the cone beam integration. They do ordering the digital appliances. They do it all from beginning to end. We have people bring in their front office team members. So the front office team member will work with Melissa and Hutan on exactly how to do every process of the medical billing. The mm-hmm. assistants will work with me and Liz, and pretty much Liz will walk them through exactly what she does. They'll go downstairs to the practice and they'll take CEREC scans on each other. We'll do 3D scans on each other. They'll do the HSTs. They'll review the HSTs. They'll kind of learn all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really the mm-hmm. Champions course. It's about once you identify who the right people are, and that's part of the Sleep 101 is come in, figure out who in your team wants to be the champion. Then the hands-on program is about the champions moving forward. And I think really, Cynthia, you, anybody listening, the challenge that you're facing is you haven't brought your team in this process with you on this journey, and you've got to. And if you don't, you'll dabble 2-3 appliances per month, which is still, look, it's better than nothing. But, you know, to get to that, you know, to get beyond 5, it's a team-driven process.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Jeff's practice is different. His practice, and he'll tell you, we met her, his champion, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so, You know, and his practice is a little bit different in the sense that it's, you know, it's really referral based. Like, you know, almost all his patients come from an outside referral.
Right. And see, that's what I was saying is that I have enough within the practice that it would be kind of an internal marketing thing because I do have an older population. You know, more than 70% of my practice is 55 or older.
Yeah.
And so.
And the analogy I try to use with everybody to understand, I say, listen, build your practice from 0 to 5 appliances per month internally. Mm-hmm. When you're mm-hmm. consistently hitting 5 appliances per month internally, you're mm-hmm. ready to go external and ask for referrals. Like, I don't believe people have earned the right to ask for referrals until they've done enough, right?
Right.
And
you're
consistently doing the ones where you practice, your team understands the jargon, they understand the process, they understand all of those things. Yeah. So I try to get people to go from 0 to 5 internally and then start building externally and getting the referrals out, doing the marketing, doing all that stuff. Yeah. Like, I think marketing, all that stuff is overkill. The 0 to 5 is in your practice. It's in your hygiene chair.
No, I'm telling you, I can come up with 5 this week. I promise you. I'm smiling because that's what Jeff was saying. He's like, you need to build it internally. Exactly what Jeff Ryan said. And then for me, I'm not intimidated by talking to physicians because, you know, when I was married to
Dr. Wonderful,
you know, I sat at a social engagement next to the guy that discovered interferon. And, you know, Charlie and I were talking, yak, you know, just another guy. So that doesn't intimidate me. It's just launching another thing while I'm trying to juggle the balls of, you know, running the practice and doing all the things we are.
Then don't you launch it. Let your team launch it.
Well, yeah, no. And I'm hearing you and I'm saying, it's just like Invisalign. You know, I wanted to bring in, I had Invisalign skills. I've been doing Invisalign since 2003 and I did Bob Garrity's class. So I did straight wire. I like ortho. I wanted to be an orthodontist, but I just was tired of going to school and I didn't have money to continue with school. And it wasn't until I have this team in place that now it's like we're doing more Invisalign cases because they enjoy it. They have the background in it. And I've taken one of them with me to a refresher course. It's the same thing. I mean, you're saying this and I'm like, it's just like Invisalign.
Every project that you listen, what's made, I firmly believe this, what's made me successful is that I'll go and figure out what it is that I selfishly want to do.
Okay? Yeah.
And then I'll figure out how to do it with the team. Because I'm not great at things. I'm very disorganized. And so I need those people around me who are organized, who will make it happen. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm focused on some other things now in my life.
Yeah.
And selfishly and altruistically, I want more for my team members.
Yeah. In fact, when I had to hire 2 new team members at the beginning of the year. That's what makes this everything I've done very remarkable is that I've done this with 2 new assistants, 1 new hygienist. You know, I've got essentially a new team up front. They've been with me less than 2 years, but I've finally assembled a group of people that they're smart, but they're allowing me to be the leader. instead of telling me I'm doing it wrong.
You being the visionary.
Yeah, I guess that's a better way to put it. I mean, yeah.
Because ultimately, a leader or a boss or a visionary, to me, what you want to be is a visionary. And that's not this pie in the sky nonsense, okay? To me, yeah. The visionary is, listen, this is where I see our practice going. And listen, it's I'm here to support each of you. Let's figure out how we can do it together.
Yeah.
Let's implement this in 6 months. And then 6 months from now, we'll start the next thing. You know, that's a visionary for me.
So when I ran the ad for the assistant, I borrowed on some of, I took Dr. Garg's classes, and he's got some real good management books. And the ad was like, are you tired of sucking spit?
Yeah, basically.
Well, you know,
I met Liz when we were in Arizona.
Yeah.
And so for me, I won't do a sleep program without taking her now.
Yeah.
You know, just like I won't do an implant program without taking Whitney, who's my lead assistant doing all of that with me.
Yeah.
So, you know, ultimately, because what good is it if I learn it and they don't implement it, right?
Well, and the thing is, you come back enthusiastic and they're like, oh God, here we go again. Although I don't have that team anymore. But if you take
have that, whether you have that team or not, they have that mentality. Yeah. Because how many things have we gone and learned and failed on?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think dentists are all a little bit ADD, ADHD. You know, we're like running from one bright, shiny object to another, you know? I mean, we are. There's no way we could run from five rooms and be doing hygiene checks while you're, you know, dealing with, oh, I'm gonna wait now while this gum tissue is, you know, not bleeding, and I'll go do the hygiene checks. You know, I mean, there's a little bit of that going on. But if you take them, then you don't have to come back and spend precious time teaching them or doing the videos to teach them, as we talked about earlier. You know, so yeah, I mean, and as you're saying this, T-Bone, what I'm hearing is that I've got enough within my practice that I do have enough work for an associate. Because if I just build these different areas.
Well, think about this. I'm telling you this from personal experience, okay? If you got out of your own way, brought your team with you, and you went from 0 to 5 appliances at an average of 2 to 2,500, that's 10 grand a month.
Yeah.
That's 10 grand you give to your associate, plus you take some of the fillings off. I mean, you could probably take, you know, and you're done, right?
Yeah. Plus we could start doing more. And, you know, like we came out of the box returning ortho to it with Invisalign, and we did a bunch of cases, boom, 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 boom. And then we got complacent. And most of it is the selling in the hygiene room, selling. And so one of the things that me and I've talked about doing is like handing out something to the patient when they walk in, a questionnaire, like, you know, some of the Invisalign questions or sleep apnea questions, or, you know, we could target people. But it's an idea we've had, because then it prompts a conversation, and it would be not like fill out this questionnaire like the stop bang. It'd be like, hey, you know, and you can make it kind of cutesy or provocative. Like, are you tired of sucking spit? You know, or do you wake up with your mouth that's dry? Or, you know,
you could look at the patient's medical history and identify your high target candidates in your practice.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that hard. Look, here's what I would tell you, Cynthia, okay, on sleep. And I've seen this over and over and over again. My successful practices bring their team, they develop champions, and they take off with it.
Yeah.
My practices that do some sleep apnea don't empower their team members.
Yeah.
My practices that fail from our training in the sense that they don't do anything didn't bring the team members.
Yeah.
So I'm so powerful about this. Our fees include the team members at this point for the training.
Oh.
So whether you bring them or don't bring them, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, pay the same.
Champion training, it does. You know, it includes them, because that's the whole point of that. I mean, I don't like when dentists come alone. It drives me. In fact, I pick up the phone and I call them and say, hey, why are you coming alone? Just don't come. Let me send your money back and come at another time when you can bring them.
Oh.
It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Well, Cynthia, can you believe it's been an hour and a half?
No, you're easy to talk to.
So it's Dr. Cynthia Graves, and your email address is cgravesdds at cynthiagravesdds.com. You're in Austin, Texas. You were married to Mr. Wonderful, and now you found true Mr. Wonderful in George.
Yeah.
I got to make a little fun of you. We did this interview, and she had a blanket hanging up behind her. And I thought she was going to do an ISIS commercial of some sort with me, but she didn't.
Cynthia,
for and on behalf of our listeners, it has been an unbelievable joy to talk to you. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you or whatever, just let us know.
Yeah, feel free to email. I'll try to get that the deposit slip.
Oh, yeah, the envelope. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
I actually have that whole thing in paper, so I can go to the office tomorrow and hopefully get that out to you.
Yeah, just PDF it to me or whatever, or just take photos with your iPhone and text it to me.
Oh, okay, do that. Yeah, yeah, that'll work great. Well, thank you so much. It's been a privilege. Always fun to talk.
The honor's been mine. It's been great.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.